Like the Blue Jays, we took yesterday off, in our case, for a special extended edition of Hockey Central. And like the Blue Jays, we are back at it today. Hello, everybody. It is Baseball Central for April 15th, brought to you by our good friends at Home Hardware. I am Jeff Blair. Kevin Barker joins me. The Blue Jays start a three-game series against the Minnesota Twins tonight. Brandon Morrow on the mound against the pitcher formerly known as Phil Hughes. And we'll deal with that matchup in a second. But we got a lot to talk about. Friday was our last show, and it seems like almost the entire baseball world is, and I wouldn't say it's come to an end, but Kevin, there's been a ton of stuff that's happened. We have the Tampa Bay Rays actually having a pitcher need to undergo Tommy John surgery, which doesn't happen.
Never happens.
Mark Topkin of the Tampa Bay Times will join us, and we'll deal with that and the implications that has for Tampa Bay and indeed for the American League East. But I want to focus on the Blue Jays. I guess the big news out of that two of three game series against the Baltimore Orioles, other than the fact the bats came alive, was the fact that Mycerus Touris is out for 4 to 6 months.
It's a huge loss for the Jays.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I was making the point, Kevin. I was saying, look, this is a guy that in spring training, a lot of us looked at Mycerus Touris as saying, okay, he's a bench guy. The Jays said Ryan Gomes is going to be the second baseman. Jose Reyes is obviously the shortstop. Reyes gets hurt. Gomes gets off to a so-so start offensively. His Touris looks really good, solidifies the infield defense, looking very much, Kevin, like the guy the LA Angels of Anaheim used to rely on so much. And he's going to be missed.
He's the guy that you can't teach experience. That's what it is. You have two unexperienced guys playing the middle infield, which is big spots for your defense, especially the Jays' defense is real good now. And when you miss a guy like that, it's going to make it real hard for them to fill that role, I think.
Now, they've called up Munenori Kawasaki. Jay Happ will also be up. We'll talk about that in a minute as well. But it looks like the plan right now is Jonathan Diaz and Ryan Gomes, Diaz at short, Gomes at second. And I suppose Munenori Kawasaki could play second and Gomes could go to short. But, I mean, Kevin, you're right. The thing I think we saw coming out of the Baltimore series is we talked about it last week, how I think we're beginning to get the sense that the Blue Jays defense may, in fact, be kind of an unheralded strength of this team.
Yeah.
Buck Showalter, by the way, told Jim Palmer and Gary Thorne on Sunday that other than the Orioles outfield, which is a Gold Glove outfield, he thinks the Jays outfield is the best defensive outfield in baseball. So they're getting a reputation there. Mycerus Touris was key to that.
It's huge. You're having Edwin picking it up at first base. You're having Brett Laurie's just off the charts. You're having Batista making sick plays. I mean, it's contagious is what it is. One guy does it, and then everybody else wants to do better. I think that's what it is. And you're seeing it every day. They're helping a pitching staff that we had our doubts about.
Sure.
And we may still have our doubts about it. But when you have defense like that's being played now, it just lifts. Well, you see Laurie making plays, and Burley's just standing there going, it's the tip of the hat every day they pitch. So it's saving them a lot of runs. It's keeping them in a lot of games. And in the East, you can't ask for a whole lot more, I don't think.
No, and Kevin, what I think the other significance of this, too, is so much in the American League East, and you know this, you've seen a lot of baseball. So much in the American League East is damage control. And Joe Torre always used to talk about, look, every team in this division has a strength. And he said that one of the things he thought the Yankees didn't get credit for was he said they knew how to limit damage. You know, it wasn't just a matter of, boy, we've got these superstars and Mariano finishes out the game. He said, we limited damage. We played good defense. You'd get one run against us instead of two runs in an inning because somebody would make a play. And that's huge for this pitching staff because the ball's going to be in play a fair amount now.
Sure.
With this pitching staff.
It's kind of like when they say speed never slumps. Well, your hitting's going to slump. It's going to be an up and down thing. You want to keep it as even as you can. But defensively, should never really slump. It should be one of those things that you should rely on all the time. Obviously, in the last couple of years for the Jays, that's been a concern. But now, I mean, heck, you got to look at it as that's your strongest point besides the bullpen. I mean, it's keeping you in a lot of games, which is all you can ask for.
Now, I want to get to the bullpen as well. Jay Happ is called up. He will be in the bullpen. Casey Jansen is expected back soon. At some point, the Jays are going to have to make a call. Happ, Rogers, and Redmond, not all three of them can stay up here. We know, of course, that Jay Happ has to agree to go down to the minors. I don't see that happening. So my sense is it's going to come down to Rogers or Redmond. I think that means Rogers is probably the odd man out because Todd Redmond's pitched pretty effectively.
Heck yeah.
But you want to talk about a guy who's come out of this weekend against Baltimore. And I mean, people didn't talk a lot about Brett Cecil in spring training. And I think that
they're still not talking about it.
Well, it's almost like he's taken for granted now. And I'll tell you, I mean, you made the case about Brett Cecil. You've got a lefty who can get both lefties and righties out. It's like Brett Cecil's, it's almost as if, Kevin, in the past 3 years, we've just seen this guy's career grow and grow and grow.
It's that thing where you have to know your role. I think he's found his role. It's very hard to do in baseball because obviously every pitcher wants to start first because you make more money. And let's face it, everybody wants to feed their family. But when you have a lefty that you can call on to get the heart of a lineup out, which is what he did in Baltimore, and made it look pretty easy, which was very, very impressive. I think he struck out three out of the five, and that was the 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 guys. So when you have a weapon like that in the bullpen, it just it saves your bullpen. You don't have to go and get a lefty and then get a righty. You can bring in one guy to face all of those guys and have lots of confidence doing it. It's huge for the Jays.
And, you know, the thing with Brett Cecil, and you talked about getting comfortable in your role, and I talked to Brett a little bit about this last year. People need to remember that this guy was kind of, when he was in college, people didn't know whether he was going to close. I mean, at one point, I can remember J.P. Ricciardi saying they thought he could close. He would close a little bit in college. He'd start as well. The Jays kind of went back and forth on him. I think injuries more than anything else kind of helped push him into a niche. But there are times where you watch Brett Cecil pitch, and in the back of your mind, you go, God, I wonder if that guy could close.
Yeah,
I don't think he can, but I think this is a perfect role. But you know what I'm saying about there are pitchers like that.
I think there's a different... It's a different mindset when you're pitching in the seventh inning and coming in with that one-run lead in the ninth inning and facing the heart of a lineup. I think it's just a different mindset. Is he ready for that? Hey, who knows? I'm sure the only way you would know is just to throw him in there and see if he can do it. But it would be real hard to take him out of the role he's in now. I mean, he's dominating it. And he makes it look real, real easy, which is, let's face it, that Baltimore lineup's no joke. Especially the heart of that lineup is at the time before the Jays showed up, we're raking.
So, Kevin, the Mark Burley's performance on Sunday, this is a lineup that I was just looking at the numbers. This is a lineup that had a career average of .340 against him coming into the game. We know that Mark Burley struggles early in the year traditionally. He's now 3-0. His ERA is under 1. A lot of people have been pointing out that Mark Burley did something a little differently this spring. Instead of taking a day off or instead of missing a start as he normally does, he stuck to the same routine come hell or high water. At this stage of a guy's career as a pitcher, can that little subtle change really make that much difference?
I think so. 90% of the game is all mental. If you think it works, it could be just the easiest thing. If he thinks, hey, I'm not going to miss a start in spring training. Now, listen, if you're a 10-year veteran in spring training, you really don't want to go on a 3-hour road trip to pitch. So it says a lot about his makeup that he actually did it. And I think just by watching him, the difference is he's making better pitches. And he changes speeds really well. And, hey, when you know how to pitch and you're a veteran and you've done it and you've had success, and you can tell he has a lot of fun. And you can pretty much guess it's about a 2.5-hour game with him. So if you want to eat early, make your reservations because he's getting it and going.
Buck and Pat also both made the point that on the telecast that there was the bottom of the third inning. There was a situation where he locked up Matt Wieters with a 86 mile an hour two seam fastball. I mean, Wieters just couldn't do anything.
He must have humped up because it's usually 84.
But it happened after he'd given up a hit. Darner Navarro came out and put his hand on his shoulder and said, "Hey, you know, we don't know what was said, but it was pretty clear. You know, Buck and Pat were sort of assuming that it was, look, let's just go at this guy. Let's try this." And, you know, we talk a lot about the difference between Navarro and J.P. Arencibi, and we're going to deal with J.P.'s involvement in another instant replay flap later on in the show. But you really get the sense that he and Navarro are just so in sync.
Sure.
And that kind of surprises me in a way, because I've got to think it would be hard for a catcher to have to adapt to a guy who works as fast as Mark Burley. But boy, it's like it's seamless so far.
Really, all he has to do is just know what finger to put down early. He's hitting his spot so well. And it seems, well, you saw him shake off maybe once, and it wasn't really a shake off. It was more of a, I don't want it there, I want it here. And he actually showed him where he wants it. Hey, when you're going that good and you know where I'm throwing it and how I'm going to throw it.
And when you can show the hitter where you want to throw it.
We get back to that old saying about tipping pitches. That's a prime example. He told the guy, I don't want it there, I want it over here.
Mm-hmm.
If you hit your spots in the big leagues and you know how to pitch, it doesn't matter. You can tell him what's coming because he did it. So,
you know, Kevin, it's Kevin Barker and Jeff Blair in Baseball Central, by the way. We know that for the past couple of years, the baseball gods haven't been that. they haven't looked favorably in the Blue Jays. I'm just going to throw some stuff out you. And Mark Topkin of the Tampa Bay Times is going to join us, by the way. So the Boston Red Sox right now, Shane Victorino, right hamstring injury. Will Middlebrook, he's got a calf injury. John Lester, negotiations on his contract have broken down. Koji Uehara has got shoulder soreness. Dustin Pedroia doesn't have a broken left wrist, but there are some issues with that. The New York Yankees, their closer's hurt. The Tampa Bay Rays, we're going to talk about them. They've actually got a raft of pitching injuries, something that just does not normally happen with this organization. Do you think the baseball gods are, do you think that what goes around is really coming around now with the Blue Jays?
I don't think you ever want to wish bad ill will against teams. But it looks like that he may have been listening the last couple of years, and it just you know what it seems like early in the year. This usually happens to most teams. Players are trying to get in the scheme of all the travel and the playing and going to different places to play, and the weather is, you know, the Jays are going to tell you about the weather here the next 3 days in Minnesota.
Yeah, it's going to be.
It's a good thing we're here, not there.
I know. Well, although this weather may. This is Minnesota weather, trust me.
Spring.
That's true. Reminding me that it's spring.
It is. It's a bad thing to be hurt, but it seems that there's a lot of teams, especially the Rays, that are, so to speak, up the creek.
Well, and this is the thing. The big concern, Kevin, I think a lot of people had about the American League East this year, I know I had it, was the thought that somebody might run away with it early, that somebody might get out of the gate and be 10-2 or you know, have one of those starts, or conversely, somebody be 2-10.
The Rays.
But they're all bunched together.
Sure, well.
And we thought the Rays were going to be the team to do it. I certainly did.
I thought the Rays, just by the pitching staff, it's ridiculous. But now, who's got the best pitching staff in the league, in the American League East? Well, you're...
Wow.
Exactly.
You got a debate now.
So now you look at that, we're trying to get it to the fifth inning and turn it over to the bullpen. Who has the best bullpen in the American League East?
The Blue Jays, I think.
Exactly right. So now we're having a whole different discussion. It is 13 games into the season, but we can throw that out there that, hey, now we're flipping a coin. So,
well, when you look at the Rays, Matt Moore, we've already said, will have Tommy John surgery, so he's done for the year.
Mm-hmm.
Jeremy Hellickson was already out. He had loose bodies in his elbow. Alex Cobb was on the DL with an oblique injury. Now, as I said, Matt Moore. I mean, they've got Eric Bedard who's going to be pitching for them. And they don't get Alex Colome back until, I believe, late May. He's serving a suspension for PEDs. So this is, I don't know if you'd call this a pitching crisis for the Rays. I can't remember ever using the words pitching and crisis and Rays in the same sentence, Kevin. But we're going to ask Mark Topgun of the Tampa Bay Times, who covers the Rays, about this. Mark, thanks for doing this today.
No problem, man. I've heard you put two odd words together before, though, but it's usually late at night.
Shh, we don't talk about that. And those aren't odd words. You know that I say those words all the time. Is this a crisis for the Rays?
Yeah, I mean, if it's not a crisis, what would be just before a crisis here? A cascade of woe, maybe? I mean, it's pretty bad. I mean, I can probably, it's going to rain here all day in Baltimore. I have time to think of some better words. But, yeah, I mean, it's a pretty bad situation. I mean, I caught the tail end of what you guys were saying when I first came on here. The way I see it is, of their top seven starting pitchers, they're without four right now in Moore, Cobb, Hellickson, and Colome.
Wow.
And they're reaching down into their depth with, in fact, the mighty Canadian Eric Bedard is joining the rotation. Cesar Ramos, who's been their long reliever for a couple years, is in the rotation. And even after a bad start Sunday, they're going to give him another start. You know, they still got David Price. That's not a bad place to be. And they still got Chris Archer. He's really good. Although he had a really bad game last night. Jake Odorizzi's a guy that, you know, was going to be kind of their sixth man here and be the guy who would join the rotation had they traded Price, and they didn't. Then Hellickson gets hurt, and they did need Odorizzi in the rotation, and it was going to be a short-time thing. And now, I mean, effectively, Odorizzi's basically their number three starter, at least till Alex Cobb comes back. So it's definitely a reach and a stretch and an uncomfortable and unusual position for the pitching-rich Tampa Bay Rays to be in. They still have some guys at AAA they feel can help them if they need to, but it's definitely unique and odd.
Sure. Now, you mentioned David Price. Is there an added pressure now that the Rays have the crisis with the pitching to re-sign him as soon as possible?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I almost think, you know, you might even look at it the other way and say if this season just, you know, spins away from them now, if they can't dig themselves out of this hole, do they go ahead and trade him during the season?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was a little bit of a surprise that they kept him, you know, during the winter. I think most of us thought they would trade him. They kept him. They kind of had this mentality of, you know, they were kind of going for it in a relative sense. I mean, they pushed their payroll to a record amount again for them at $80 million. Kept Price, you know, added some guys, re-signed Loney for some big bucks on their scale, and David DeJesus and Balfour, and, you know, they kind of added all these pieces to try to keep the gang together and go for it this year. And, you know, I think you have to wonder, you know, as you said, you know, does this increase pressure to sign Price, or knowing that that's probably not realistic outside of maybe one more one-year deal, and he's already up to $14 million this year, do they decide if the season gets away from him to trade him come June or July?
You know, and I guess we're joined by Mark Topgun, by the way, the Tampa Bay Times. It's Jeff Blair and Kevin Barker on Baseball Central. I guess the other thing, too, Mark, is when you look at the American League East, and Kevin and I were talking about this, and nobody's running away with it. And in some ways, if you're the Rays, if you can somehow weather the storm, if everybody stays bunched together, you know, then I don't know. It almost makes your decision in some ways even more complicated, because you hit the All-Star break and everybody's within four or five games of first place. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but I mean, who knows in this division? Boy, you're almost obligated to hang on to David Price and just keep going for it.
Yeah, and that's, you know, one thing, as bad as it's been, and you know, not only is their pitching obviously in a bad shape here, but their offense has been miserable the last week or so, and they're averaging like 1.9 runs a game for the past eight games, I think it is. But, you know, I was talking to Evan Longoria about this last night, and his point was, yes, our pitching is messed up. Yes, our offense is not clicking at all, and we're still in first place. So, correct. And you know, they're going to get Alex Cobb back, and it's, you know, conservatively, you know, 4 weeks or so. So let's say, you know, even if it's five or six, and they're going to get Alex Colome off suspension. He comes off at whatever Durham's 50th game is. It's around May 23rd or so, pending a rainout or two. So, you know, suddenly, you know, they could be pretty healthy. Hellickson is due back right around June 1st or sometime in that first week of June. He seems to be making good progress. So, you know, there's three ifs there. But if they get Cobb, Hellickson, and Colome back, you know, and then they're all pitching well, and then the only one they're really missing is Matt Moore. Suddenly it's not so bad.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, hang in there. Get the offense. It's going to get better. They are hitting the ball hard. They are hitting the ball at people. Joe Maddon is right in that regard. And then get that pitching back. But, yeah, this next month or so could really be the challenge, I think.
Is, you know, we're so used to Joe Maddon making stuff work offensively. Or I mean, he just does. People talk about how he's, in a lot of ways, maybe the most efficient manager in baseball in addition to one of the best. Does this change how he views a game? You know, having this thinness in the starting pitching ranks. You know Joe as well as anybody, Mark. Will this change the way he runs a game, especially offensively?
Well, I think, you know, one thing is they were pretty set up. They liked the fact they had Price and Cobb on back-to-back days, knowing those guys were pretty much guaranteed for seven innings every start. So it allowed him to use his bullpen in different ways because he knew he didn't really need it much on those 2 days, so he could go heavily with it on his other 3 days. That's why he pulled Cesar Ramos in the third inning in Cincinnati the other day, because he knew he had his bullpen, you know, built up pretty good. So I think that'll affect things a little bit. I don't know if he can get much more creative offensively. I mean, they do some weird stuff as it is,
mm-hmm.
you know, in terms of hit and run and bunt and try to put guys in motion. I mean, their big shift really was last year. They went to more of a contact-oriented approach. They cut way down on their strikeouts. They hit into a lot more double plays. They don't have a lot of speed this year. It's nothing like the Rays teams of the past with Crawford and Upton, you know, running circles around people. They just don't have that. Desmond Jennings is the only guy really with any speed. So I think they've got to kind of find their niche a little bit offensively. It's not a three-run homer team, and it's not a steal-a-lot-of-bases team. It's somewhere in the middle and trying to get, you know, three runs on three hits kind of thing.
Mark Topkin joins us on Baseball Central. Mark, when did Yunel Escobar become a core piece of this thing?
Well,
honest to God, you know,
huh?
I'll tell you what, I mean, you know the circumstances. He was basically run out of town on a rail here, and, you know, I wake up one morning, and there he is, Mr. Long-Term Contract.
You know, look, I mean, none of us know what was going through his head. What he did in Toronto was obviously a horribly bad decision. You know, whether, and I've heard everything from, you know, it was totally on him to why didn't his teammates stop him? You know, did people not stop him out of, you know, because they wanted to, you know, they could have stopped him and didn't. I've heard all different scenarios. He obviously did something really dumb. He made a really dumb decision. But what you heard at the time, or at least when the Rays got him, I should say, in that offseason was, you know, that was an isolated incident. Now, you hear other stories he's selfish. You hear other stories he doesn't play hard. He doesn't work out hard. None of that has been surfaced here. None of that has surfaced here. So, you know, whether this was a guy who the light finally clicked and he realized, hey, if I'm going to make it, and, you know, there's so much money to be made in this game, I better get my act together and shape up, or it was just this different environment. I mean, it's a very positive, welcoming place with the Rays. The Rays, they sell the whole positive avatar. They have very few rules. Guys are encouraged, not just allowed to be themselves, encouraged to be themselves. You should see these guys, when they're dressed for a road trip, they look worse than a bunch of high school kids a lot of times.
Or a bunch of sports reporters.
Yeah, I you know, there's some days, I rarely get to say this, but there's some days when I actually am not the worst-dressed person in that room because, you know, the jeans and the shirts and stuff, but they just don't have any rules. It's like they're a college team, they're a high school team, just be what you want to be, and maybe that's what Yunel Escobar needed. I mean, they, you know, there's not a lot of media, he doesn't do a lot of interviews, I mean, there's always a translator involved, so he kind of just gets to go at his own pace, and yeah, you know, they kid him all the time. He wears the absolute tightest shirts and pants you could imagine, and they're always a little joking with him. But he is, and Maddon said this in spring training, he is their energy. He is the guy that gets them going every day. They feed off him. He brings the attitude and the energy to the dugout. He's the upbeat guy every day. So whatever the transformation was, they not only like it, they love it. They rewarded him with a couple more years on his deal. And, you know, some people have said maybe he is the ultimate example of the Joe Maddon, you know, regime, the restoration
yep.
project they can do.
Now, Mark, let me ask you one more quick question. How is Ryan Hannigan fit in with the pitching staff? And now with all the woes, how can he help the pitching staff from either AAA or the guys they're going to get from other places?
Well, I mean, they already had, you know, one veteran guy that they really liked in Jose Molina, who you guys are obviously familiar with, who
sure.
does a good job with some of the young pitchers and as well as the veteran guys. And, you know, in Hannigan, they feel like they've got a great complement. They have two really, really strong defensive catchers, both guys that are good at calling games, pitch framing, controlling the running game. So Mm-hmm. You know, their whole thing is not as much how good their defense is or their pitching is, but the totality of it. And they call it run prevention. And I think both of those guys are big parts of that, both, you know, in steering these young guys and in getting the veterans, the most out of the veteran guys.
Sure.
Mark, it was good of you to do this. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Mark.
No problem, guys. We'll catch up with you soon.
Take care. That is Mark Topkin of the Tampa Bay
Times.
If
anybody can do it, it's the Rays. That's what they just seem to figure out how to do it every year.
Do not underestimate Joe Maddon. And getting Ryan Hannigan, you touched on Ryan Hannigan. Getting Ryan Hannigan was it was such a typical Rays move.
Yeah.
And there's so much value in it, and that's
it's hard to find the right guy, as the Jays know, to put the right fingers down at the right time.
Well, and the thing is, you know, you made the point. This is a guy who's coming into a staff. Now, the staff's got a reputation of being real good. They don't need a guy coming in telling them, you know, all the stuff you've been doing. I mean, that's not the way the Rays work. You need a guy who can come in and work with what is already working. And,
right.
And Kevin, you've seen it. That's an art form.
It is. I think it's more of that when he catches it, he's sticking it and throwing it back with confidence. That's all they need.
We've got a lot to talk about still in Baseball Central. Remember Irvin Santana and Ubaldo Jimenez? Now, if you saw Ubaldo Jimenez pitch against the Jays on Sunday, you're probably wondering what the hell all the fuss was about in the offseason. If you've heard what Irvin Santana's done, you're really beginning to...
Oops.
you kind of wish that deal might have worked out a little bit for the Blue Jays. He's been lights out. He's, again, yesterday pitched very well for the Atlanta Braves. And the Atlanta Braves just, they get guys hurt and they just refuse to go away. So we want to talk about Irvin Santana. Got to talk about the reversed call on the botched transfer by J.P. Arencibi in the Mariners-Rangers game last night. Ron Washington got ejected for arguing the video replay, just as John Farrell did in Sunday Night Video Replay. I told you guys this was going to be an issue all year. It's continuing to be an issue. Managers getting ejected for arguing video evidence, which, it's just like arguing... We're almost getting back to the point now. It's like it used to be arguing with umpires. You argue and you know nothing's going to be changed.
Sure, it's not like watching a baseball game anymore. It's like watching a replay game.
It is. It's like watching...
All the time. It's replay.
Yeah, and so there's a lot to deal with that. And Kevin Barker and myself will do that when Baseball Central returns on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Cooler than Math Club and almost as cool as Chess Club. The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Now, back to more Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
It is Baseball Central for April 15th. I'm Jeff Blair. This is Kevin Barker to my left. Oh, I forgot we're not on TV, so I don't have to tell people we're here. Kevin could be standing up for all we know.
I am.
Kevin could be standing up for all we know.
I am standing.
I know, you're sitting down. That's okay. Don't forget tonight, first of a three-game series, Blue Jays and Twinkies from Target Field, or Target Field, as the cultured elite like to call it. 7:30, Blue Jays Central. First pitch at 8:10, Brandon Morrow against Phil Hughes, as the Blue Jays look to build on their series win over Baltimore. And I guess, Kevin, we can expect at some point tonight that there will be a video replay controversy in this game. We've now had two managers throwing out for arguing the results of video replay. Ron Washington, John Farrell on Sunday, and poor Ron Washington last night. The incident, if you didn't see it, involved our old friend J.P. Arencibia. And the umps reversed a call on a botched transfer by Arencibia in a game against the Mariners. Ron Washington got ejected for arguing. There is a terrific article, and it's so good that I can't remember the website. I was reading yesterday about the new interpretation. This kind of snuck through a little bit, Kevin, the interpretation now that they're putting on the rule about transferring.
Nobody knows.
And nobody knows the rule for transferring the baseball. And in point of fact, a couple of players suggested that you may see guys intentionally dropping balls now.
Really?
to set up double play. I mean, they've really complicated. First of all, they've instituted video replay. Then they've changed the rules about blocking the plate. They've also got this rule in effect. And, I mean, we talked about it off the air. There isn't a game that goes by now where there isn't, not just video replay, but where there isn't a 2 or 3 minute stoppage for video replay. Sure. And you come back and you still don't.
Sure.
You don't think justice has been done.
No, the play last night, my question would be the umpire at home plate that makes the call. Does he not know the rule change? Because he knows it's a transfer rule, which means I have to keep the ball, show that I can throw it to an actual base, is the way I understand it. Does that sound right?
Yeah.
And he obviously did not do that, but he catches the ball for a second and a half, and tries to avoid the runner, and he calls him out. Well, do you not teach your umpires the rules? That's my question. So we don't have to go to replay for 3 minutes or whatever it is. The umpire should know this rule already.
Mm. Well, here's what happened. It was in Monday night. Aaron Sebia bobbled the ball during a transfer after a force out at home plate. Initially, Paul Schreiber, the home plate umpire, ruled it was an out, but it was overturned after a 3 minute and 30 second replay review. The explanation from MLB headquarters was that the play was overturned because, quote, the fielder did not have control of the ball in his throwing hand before bobbling it. Ron Wilson came out and argued about it and was thrown out of the game. But the interesting thing is there's also an interpretation. There was an incident earlier this year in a game where, and I can't remember if it was an Oakland Athletics outfielder, a guy caught the ball, took 3 steps, dropped it, transferring it, and he got dinged for it. And it's just, it seems, Kevin, as if in its rush to try to get everything right, baseball's getting a bunch of stuff wrong. I just think it's a wrong time to bring in all, to either bring in rule changes or to say we're going to enforce rules differently at the same time you're doing video replay. I mean, maybe people could say that it's better to get it all out of the way, get it all on the table, get it all out of the way, get the, you know, get all the kinks out of the system and go from there. But I just think they've really opened a Pandora's box.
It's been 13 games and that hasn't happened. So.
No.
How many games is it going to take? You have so many reviews that you can see a play, or it's just my question is know the rules. If your umpire's on the field, know what the rules are. If an example would be, say a guy catches a ball in the outfield, turns around, throws the ball in the stands. Mm-hmm. What is that? Is that the same thing as not having control of the ball? Is that a home run? Is that a what? It's the same thing.
And just John Farrell's comments after Sunday's game, which I found, for a manager to say this, and indeed John Farrell is going to be fined as a result of this, but his quote was, it's extremely difficult to have any faith in the system, to have any faith in the process that's being used. I mean, when you have a manager talking about that, that's not good.
Well, it makes it's real hard to manage the game when you have to worry about instant replays and people not knowing rules. It's almost like they have a rule book, managers do, and they have to look up these rules just to know what the rule is before they can come out and actually either, it doesn't seem to me like they argue. They come out and suggest, I guess, to, can we at least go look at it? Because it sounds to me like, I think you missed it. I think you should look at it. And then an umpire says, well, okay, I don't think I missed it, but I'm still going to look at it. And it takes 3 minutes. So,
yeah, I've been of the opinion for a while that they're going to have to overhaul this. And I don't think Tony La Russa is telling people, and Tony La Russa is working for the commissioner's office. He's telling people, hey, be a little patient. We got to let this thing work itself out.
I think they spent too much money.
Yeah, so. I think they're that's probably true, but I think they're getting to the point where they're going to have to at some point they're going to have to make a decision on this. And I don't know what you do. I don't know if you can change horse midstream. The season's underway. What are you going to do? All of a sudden announce you're not going to have video replay?
How about just spending a little bit of money and teach umpires better? But
I'll tell you what. as I said, I went both ways because I'm a bit of a traditionalist. I was not a huge fan of video replay. Then I kind of said grudgingly, all right, so many people say it's a good thing for a game. Let's go along with it. But now I'm kind of going back the old way. What I do want to talk about as well, Kevin, we touched on Irvin Santana. Of course, everybody in this city knows the story late in spring training. Blue Jays players offered to take a salary deferral or to defer some of their salary to allow the team to sign Irvin Santana. Irvin Santana decided he would be better off pitching in the National League East and the American League East, which makes a whole lot of sense to me. Mm. Irvin Santana, now granted, the games have just been against the Mets and the Phillies, so it's not like he has been pitching against the American
League
East.
It's not minor league teams.
But it's not minor league teams. And Kevin, you pointed out when we were talking off the air, I mean, he's hitting the mid to high 90s, which he hasn't done before. He had 11 punch outs last night in what turned out to be a 9-6 win over the Phillies. He has, boy, I'll tell you what, for a team that lost Chris Medlin and Brandon Beachy, he's been a bit of a godsend for the Braves this early in the season.
Yeah, he's a savior, and he's wants the ball, and he's going. What's he going? 6-7 innings every night. The three times he's pitched, so it's. It's huge for the Braves, not so much, I think, for the Jays. That would have looked real nice, a part of this staff, I think, to be one of the five in this rotation.
You know, we talked about, I want to kind of segue into the Jays starting rotation a little bit. We talk about the rotation, and they've got, you know, they got the Minnesota Twins tonight. You've got Brandon Morrow on the mound. This rotation now, and we are only through 13 games, so we have to throw that out there. But this rotation has hardly been the Achilles heel we thought it was going to be with Mark Burley. I think Mark Burley's starts really have kind of set.
It's more their offense, I think, right now, struggling more than their pitching.
Are you surprised by what you've seen out of this rotation so far?
I think so. I think you have to give a lot of credit to Navarro. Mm-hmm. I think he's the way he's taken this pitching staff and you know, just little things, going out and putting his hand on Burley's back and just saying, this is what I want, this is where I want it, let's do it. It says a lot, and it's, you know, it says a lot by them picking him up. And I think they're, me personally, I think they're only going to get better because you have a lot of guys here that have lots of things to prove and jobs are on the line. And when that happens, you see different kinds of pitching. And you got to figure, two of these guys are the only two people that have job security. The other three don't. So when that happens, it's a little different game then.
What'd you see out of Dustin McGowan on the weekend? Obviously, velocity and tremendous movement in his pitches.
Sure, it's crazy. First thing I saw was confidence. He wanted the ball, and it didn't look to me like he was worrying about tipping pitches or just looked like he wanted to go out and pitch. And he was happy to be pitching. And the main thing was he made good pitches, which is, I don't care how hard you throw or what your stuff does. You have to hit spots and make good pitches when you have to. I know he had one inning where he had first and second, and you want to see that as a manager, I think, when he can get out of big spots and keep your team in the game. And hey, he's earned himself another start, and it's, you know, Jays fans, I think, should be optimistic.
You talked about the Minnesota Twins, the team that a lot of people underestimate, frankly, for a variety of reasons. But you were pointing out that the Minnesota Twins offensively, they're far from the worst team in baseball offensively, aren't they?
No, they're third in the league in runs scored. I mean, you would never think that, but you have Plouf and Kubel, and you got all kinds of guys that are doing their job because their pitching staff is most like small market teams. It's not very good. So you have guys that are stepping it up. And like I said, the Jays are going to have to come in here and pitch. And the cold weather is only going to help pitchers because, trust me, I was a hitter. I know cold weather is a no-no. Nobody wants to play.
Edwin Encarnacion and Jose Bautista hit the snot out of the ball in this ballpark. Not to mention that they're facing Phil Hughes. The Jays, by the way, have hit 15 home runs against Hughes at 116.
Yeah, he doesn't miss too many barrels.
He does not miss too many barrels, especially when he's facing the Jays. But I wanted to ask you, when you see a guy like Jose Bautista, 10 home runs in 11 games, Edwin Encarnacion in that ballpark, Edwin's numbers a little less, but still really good. What makes a good ballpark for a particular hitter?
Anything. It could be a lot of different things. It could be they see the ball there a lot better than they do other places. It could be the food is better. It could be anything. But the main thing I would think it would be is one feeds off the other. If one comes to the park and he's hitting, because normally they hit right behind each other. Mm-hmm. I think now they're split up between them. But it's still more, if you do it, hey, I want to do it too. And you can see their numbers are about similar. One looks like they're driving in the other. And I think Bautista hits a lot of places.
Yeah.
This is not a huge surprise. Edwin's starting to come into his own the last two or three years, but Batista's hitting a lot of places. This is not surprising.
Edwin looked, and we saw this from Edwin last year when he got off the bit of a slow start. We saw signs against Baltimore that Edwin was coming out of it. And Edwin always makes the point that with him, he says it's nothing physical. It takes me a while to see the ball.
Some people are like that. Could be the weather. I mean, the weather has a big thing to do with it because you're leaving Florida, hot weather.
Mm-hmm. Indoors.
I can wear t-shirts, hitting, I can do, and then you come to cold places. You know, luckily in Toronto, it's dome, but
the still a climate
places
change.
On the road, there's cold. Could be numerous, could be a mental thing. Just, I struggle in April. That's just the way it is. But, hey, he's taking some healthy, healthy cuts. He's not getting cheated, which is, he doesn't look to me like he's struggling. Now, he is average-wise, if you look at that, and driving in runs and hitting home runs, but
He's missed a couple, too.
He's hit fouling them straight back, which is what, if you foul one back, that's what you want to do. That means you're on time.
Right.
And healthy cuts.
The Twins and Jays will start their three-game series tonight at Target Field. 8:10 is the first pitch. It'll be Brandon Morrow against Phil Hughes. Baseball Central, or Blue Jay Central, I should say, will be on at 7:30. The game can be seen on Sportsnet Ontario, East, West, and Pacific. And, of course, the game can be caught right here on Sportsnet 590. The Fan. A little bit of a programming note. Hockey Central is next. Bill Daly, the deputy commissioner of the NHL, will join the boys in studio right at high noon. Randy Carlyle's postseason news conference, or his end of season news conference, will be at 12:30 this afternoon from the Air Canada Center, and we will go to that. Hockey Central will go to that live at 12:30. So again, Bill Daly in studio at 12. Hockey Central going live to Randy Carlyle's news conference at 12:30 this afternoon. And, of course, based on some of the things we heard yesterday from Brendan Shanahan and Tim Lewicki and David Donis, this is going to be a much-anticipated news conference by Randy Carlyle. That's it for Kevin Barker and myself in Baseball Central. We will be back tomorrow on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Again, don't forget, Jays and Twins tonight. First pitch at 8:10 p.m. on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. And on Sportsnet East Ontario, West, and Pacific. Blue Jays Central at 7:30. Greg and Jamie will get you set for tonight's game. For Kevin Barker and Mark Topkin, this is Jeff Blair saying thanks so much for joining us on Baseball Central, brought to you by Home Hardware. Have a great day, everybody.
Central on the Sportsnet Radio Network is brought to you by Home Hardware.